Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Chris Harder. Welcome, Chris. I'm so happy to have you with me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, we begin at the beginning, and I don't really know as much about you as I thought I did, so... Where were you born? Are you a native Oregonian or?
I am. I was born in Portland. Can't remember the name of the exact hospital, but I think it's where Adidas is now. Don't hold me that 100%. My mom would and dad would obviously know better, but I believe that was the hospital there. And so I was born in 1977 in Portland and am still here.
I'm guessing that you haven't been here the whole time, but we're going to find that out here as we proceed. So you obviously grew up in Portland. Why were your parents here? Was this a home area for them? Or do you know what that story is?
Oh, yeah. No, I know. No, it was not a home area for them. Both my parents grew up in southern Minnesota in rural communities adjacent. My father in Mountain Lake, Minnesota, and my mother in Butterfield, both very small towns, very farming oriented, high concentrations of Mennonites there as well. The reason I was born in Portland is my father came out to Portland State for graduate school in their urban affairs program. And my sister was born here as well while he was in graduate school. And then I think I was born after he was done with graduate school. So, yeah. So that, and then they stayed. They loved Portland so much. And if you know my dad, he loves cities, and I think he was excited to be living in a city versus perhaps the small farming town he grew up in.
And since your parents and sister are known to Portland Mennonite, let's go ahead and name them so that we know where you fit.
Sure. I'm the son of Bruce and Kathy Harder. They've obviously been with the church for quite a while. If they moved here in 1970, I think. So we're talking 50 years. My sister is Jennifer Harder. She's 6 years older than me. And obviously, people know her husband, Ralph Schuping, and their kids, Nina and Anna Schuping. And then my own family, folks know my wife, Melinda, and our kids, Samantha and Jonah.
So we've got the whole three generations at Portland Mennonite. You just have one sibling, is that correct?
That's it, yeah.
I'm guessing that things have changed a lot in Portland, but tell me about what it was like for you growing up in Portland. What did you do for fun and which part of the city were you living in? Some of those things.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, I currently live three blocks from the house I grew up in. So I did live away. I've ventured outside that three blocks in the past, but Northeast Portland, Grant High School, Grant Park neighborhood is where we grew up. I would say my childhood growing up, lots of sports. That was, you know, very sports oriented. The common ones, soccer, basketball to a certain age level, baseball. I actually ended up playing baseball in college as well. Did a lot of running, ran cross country, but actually would run road races. I think I was as young as 7 when I ran my first one, and they used to have a race to Cascade Runoff. My dad was a runner before he injured his knee. So I think I was, and my sister's the real athlete in the family. She was a very good runner and soccer player. So you get inspiration by your older siblings as well. But I was constantly active, and those were the formal things I did, but you could always find me kind of out front in the street, playing with friends, you know, whether it's, you know, whatever game we were making up. So did a lot of that as a family. Obviously, we're in Oregon, so we took advantage of the outdoors. And I remember, you know, hikes and backpacking, a lot of them with the Hostetlers. So good family friends there. So I do remember some, at least camping and hiking. And I think we went to San Juan Islands and did a bike trip together. Those types of things were very common. Obviously, growing up, Portland Mennonite Church was a big part of growing up. And then the obligations like attending school, of course.
Those pesky obligations.
I know.
So you mentioned that you played baseball. What position?
Mostly infield. And another really interesting story, Lynn Rush was my middle school baseball coach. So, you know, depending on the age and the level, you play a lot of different positions. But as I kind of progressed to higher levels, I was mostly a second baseman, played some third and short. But when I played in college, it was exclusively second base. I was a good fielder, but I didn't have a strong enough arm to make that long throw from shortstop.
Did you ever have any dreams of becoming a professional athlete in any of these?
Yeah, I think, you know, as a kid, you're always, I don't think you quite put together what it means to be a professional athlete or like go to the Olympics or something like that. So certainly I would kind of dream of those things. I think, you know, by the time I was in high school, I was pretty confident I was not going to be a professional athlete, but there's always those dreams. And, you know, for a lot of kids and a lot of adults too, sports athletes can be your quote unquote heroes, people you look up to or whatnot. So it sat there, but I was also fairly kind of realistic that wasn't going to be my living.
And I just have to add that as we're sitting here, the jacket that Chris is wearing has a big T on it. And I even know what that's for. It's for the Portland Timbers.
That's right. So actually our family has season tickets. We split it between my parents, my family, my sister's family. And so we have two seats and we kind of divvy it up a third each way. So that's been actually a fun thing that we've done over the last, maybe 8 years now. Obviously last year and this year are different, not any real like in-person games, but it's fun.
And we hope to get back to that very soon.
Yeah, definitely.
You went through public school the whole time?
Yep. If people are interested, I went to Alameda Elementary, which is where my kids went. I ended up going my middle school, you know, boundaries change. We all read the newspaper. And so even for me, my sister and I went to different grade schools. They must have changed the boundary, you know, like a block or two. So we actually went to different grade schools. We both went to what was at the time called Fernwood Middle School. Now it's Beverly Cleary Middle School, Fernwood Campus, because I think there's different locations for that middle school. And then Grant High School is there. And then I went to undergrad at the University of Puget Sound, which is in Tacoma, Washington. And then I went to graduate school at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And then I'm done. No more education.
Just life.
Yeah, just life.
In high school, now obviously you were involved in sports, but were you involved in other extracurricular activities of any kind, clubs, music kinds of things, any of that?
Sports were definitely big. As I've already mentioned, that was a big part. I was in a school musical. I was not a lead. It was Fiddler on the Roof. At the time, Grant used to put on really big musicals. And don't quote me on this. And, you know, sometimes your memory as a kid is different than what it actually was. But I think at one point, it was the largest musical in the state because the music director or the theater director, it was a very community affair. So hundreds of people would be involved in it, and it would attract over, you know, several weeks sold out shows. I don't think it's quite that way now anymore, but long story short, when you have a, you know, 100 or so people involved in a musical, that means people like me who don't have musical talent can be involved. So I was in the musical Fiddler on the Roof.
I think I stepped on who you said you were.
Sasha the Bad Russian was... That was my role. So I got to break up a wedding scene and do things I wouldn't be able to do in real life. So it was a fun experience. I did a couple other kind of theater music things like my junior, senior year, but the very kind of small side part kind of things. I was in National Honor Society. So, you know, there were some kind of community and civic things we would do around that. Those are the ones related to high school.
So in Fiddler, I used to have a program called The Best from Broadway when I lived in Phoenix on the radio there. So I have this thing about musicals. Uh-huh. You did have to sing at least a little bit, right? Just like in the chorus?
Yeah, in the chorus. Somehow my genes, both my mom and dad are good singers, but I'm not. My sister's better than me, but we didn't necessarily inherit that gene. So yes, I would sing in a chorus, or even better yet, if I felt like I wasn't doing good at all, I just mouth it and no one knows.
So I won't ask you to sing any of those songs.
No. Oh, no. Even if you did, I would not.
We'll move on. So you said that you went to undergrad at Puget Sound.
Uh-huh.
By the time you were getting through high school, graduating, and was there some sense of what you might want to be studying? How and why did you pick Puget Sound? Just yeah. give us some of that story.
As with all good things, it's even more complicated than that. I actually first attended Seattle Pacific University for a semester. That's where my sister went to school. It's kind of one of the, I think at one point in the search, I kind of decided a kind of smaller school would fit me better than kind of like a big university. So, you know, as you winnow things down and you kind of think about those things, I definitely was looking at a smaller set. Seattle Pacific, where my sister went, Westmont in Santa Barbara, looked there, looked at Goshen, but it wasn't one where I personally visited it. And there were others. It's been a long time, so I'm trying to remember the others. But my first semester there, you know, and sometimes you just kind of have a gut feel of, is this where I want to be? So Seattle Pacific didn't have a baseball team, and I decided, oh, I wasn't going to play, and I didn't like that decision soon after I made it. So I was at a school, still kind of interested in playing baseball or kind of wanted to give that a chance. I had some other gut feelings of why Seattle Pacific maybe wasn't kind of the best fit for me. And I transferred after a first semester to University of Puget Sound, which is where then I spent the remainder 3.5 years. But again, a similar kind of small private liberal arts school.
I'm assuming that at some point you needed to proclaim a major.
Yep.
When you were deciding, besides the fact that baseball was an important piece, what were you thinking? What area were you even interested in, if anything? Or was it just sort of at some point you just picked something out of the blue?
Yeah, that's, you know, there's always, as you know, the harders, at least the genetic harders, not the ones who necessarily marry in. We can default to being fairly practical people. And so I was a business major. So, you know, it's a degree that obviously provides you with the right skills for a variety of different careers and professions. In retrospect, I was really interested in archaeology as a kid. And I actually did some, you know, like high school thesis and other papers around archaeology. I remember going to a couple digs as a kid, or high school, I should say. And so that always kind of intrigued me, but I didn't obviously translate that into a college degree. So I did business, got a little bit more into kind of some of more of my passions when I went to grad school, where I did urban planning and urban studies. And it gets a little bit more into, you know, there's still business type elements to it, but it gets a little bit more into anthropology type conversations and kind of civic political things. So it served me well, but it was definitely a kind of a practical baseline degree, I would say, for me.
So your undergrad degree is what? Bachelor of?
Yep. Bachelor of Arts in Business Administration and Finance.
At some point before you even graduated, did you say, I'm just going straight into grad school? Or did you decide you were going to take some time off, find some work?
No, yeah, I actually worked for 4 years, went into consulting with, at the time, there were these big kind of global consulting firms. You know, if you hear terms like PricewaterhouseCoopers and Deloitte and Touche, there was Accenture at the time. I worked for Arthur Anderson. So there's the kind of accounting side of Arthur Anderson and then the consulting side of Arthur Anderson. I was on the consulting, but it was also the firm that was also involved in that big Enron scandal. So I worked there while that went on, and the firm actually dissolved in my final year there, but I had already decided to go to grad school and leave anyway. So it didn't actually impact me, but yeah, so that's where I worked. So I did 4 years of consulting in Seattle. I lived in Seattle at the time, mostly with their big tech companies. So like Microsoft, AT&T Wireless out there, a couple other companies like that.
So it sounds like your timing for making that switch to grad school was right on.
It was. I gave my notice when that whole Enron situation broke. I was like, I should let people know I'm going to grad school, because I know they're going to have to probably make layoff decisions, or you know, they ended up selling parts of the firm to other firms and all that kind of stuff. So knowing that 6 months from then I was going to be heading to North Carolina, I gave kind of my notice, and we kind of worked out they let me stay on, but we worked out an end date. I can't remember the exact date, but it was sometime in July, like July 17th, let's say. That ended up actually being, at least for the Seattle office, the last day of Arthur Andersen. So this random date that I picked because I needed a couple weeks to then pack up and drive across country with Melinda, we were married at the time, it ended up being the day that Arthur Andersen, again, the Seattle office, I'm not sure how it all played out in every other office, but I was going in to kind of turn in my laptop and do the final HR papers. And I had colleagues of mine who were going in to turn in their laptop, and they got a new sticker on the back that basically was the barcode with the new name of the company, and they left and went back to work. It was a kind of really surreal moment that my last day was the last day of that firm. So that was interesting.
So you went to North Carolina.
Yeah.
That's kind of far away, clear on the other side of the country. How did you pick that school?
Distance one. You know, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest and went to undergrad. So just kind of saw grad school as an opportunity to go see different place in the U.S., experience something different. So that influenced it. I don't think I applied to any school on the West Coast. And my decisions were down to North Carolina and Columbia and New York. And chose my degree, primary degree was urban planning. So of course I was looking for kind of the top ranked schools with those disciplines. North Carolina was ranked very high, so it had a very good reputation. It was also a school that allowed you to do a dual degree. So I ended up doing a dual master's, one in urban planning and the other one in public administration. So that offering was a kind of an attractive to me incentive to go there. Plus, the more you learned about, I went and visited at the interview and do all that kind of stuff in Chapel Hill, and that, you know, the surrounding area is a very beautiful place. So kind of felt right. And Melinda was definitely, it felt right for me, the school, but I know Melinda, New York, that's a really big city. And I think she definitely preferred kind of the more smaller college atmosphere that Chapel Hill provided. So worked out real well.
And how many years was that program going to be?
The dual allowed me to do it in three. If I would have done them separately, it would have been two each, so four. So, you know, certain classes like statistics or, you know, economics that both programs required as kind of a requirement for the master's degrees, I only had to take it once. And it applied to both programs. So that's how I was able to kind of do it in basically a year less. And then they allowed my master's thesis, although very different. My urban planning one was like 100 pages long, and my public administration one was shorter and more kind of presentation format, although it was on the same topic. At least there were kind of synergies when doing kind of my, you know, master's thesis work too.
Were you going to school full-time, or were you also working?
Full-time, yep.
Now, you'd already had some experience working in big mm-hmm. business. At some point, did you have an idea of where this education might land you next? Did you have a goal of a place or a thing that you really would like to work at?
Going into grad school or leaving grad school?
Leaving grad
school. I chose the degree because, you know, apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. Like my dad, who kind of has a strong interest in cities and the good and bad dynamics of cities. They're complex, quote unquote, entities, not really entities, but they're, you know, there's a lot happens in the city. So I was also attracted to kind of city issues and whatnot. So one of the key kind of core degrees around that is urban planning. So that's kind of where I saw my passion go. And then kind of leaving graduate school. So in any graduate program, there's always areas of emphasis. I kind of specialized into real estate, affordable housing kind of real estate, and then community and economic development. On the other degree, public administration, I focused primarily on public finance. So there I sat with two degrees, one more practical, public administration, a little bit more kind of management finance focus, and the other one you know, more focused on policy and whatnot. So I had 2 degrees. What my job was going to be, I've always kind of been someone who likes to marry the two, policy and practical, together. But, you know, you can't always be picky. And so my first job out of grad school was actually in the North Carolina governor's budget office. So I did very much finance budgeting. And then from there, one of my professors ended up working in a kind of sabbatical situation for the North Carolina Department of Commerce, which is their state economic development agency. And he kind of recruited me over to a position there. And then I ended up staying in the field of economic development for over 15 years, and actually only made a switch 2 months before COVID. So I did that for about 15 years, and I'm back in consulting, a different type of consulting than I did coming out of undergrad, but I do consulting again now.
How did you get connected with the governor's office in North Carolina? I mean, that's pretty high in the scale of government.
Alumni. So from the program, former students had worked in the office. And so when the job openings kind of came up, and you apply and you have connections. So I knew graduates a year or two ahead of me that were working in the same place. And so that was at least the kind of an entry point to kind of learn about the opportunity and then kind of the hiring process as well.
I'm sure you have so many stories that we don't have time to hear. At some point you made a switch, although it sounds like you kind of kept doing more or less the same kind of work, but you made a move back to Portland. Tell me about what precipitated that.
Yeah, we actually lived in North Carolina, ended up buying a house in Durham, right next to Chapel Hill, if you know the area. We were there 8 years, so 3 school, and I worked there for 5. Kind of when I was finishing school, Melinda went back and got her graduate degree in counseling. She's a therapist now. So when I worked, she went back to school, and hers was about a year and a half, 2 years. They did it over the summer, so condensed it a little bit. We lived there. Both my kids were born in North Carolina. And it, you know, at some point, I think the decision, it's never one thing of why you move back. Distance wasn't anywhere close to anyone in either family, to be honest. Had young kids, and so there's always a bit of attraction of being closer to things like grandparents and their aunts and uncles as you raise kids. So that was certainly a factor. When I was in North Carolina and working in economic development and state government, politics is a big thing. And I'll just say, I don't think the direction of North Carolina's politics were in line necessarily with mine. So that was a factor, not necessarily, again, the only factor, but you kind of piece all that together, and we decided to move back to the West Coast. And we looked at a couple of places, but ultimately chose Portland. Melinda's parents were kind of planning for retirement and wanted to move to the West Coast. So suddenly everyone in on both sides of the family were going to be on the West Coast. So we moved back in 2010.
And then you got a job in this governor's office, the
At first, I worked for what used to be called the Portland Development Commission, which is now called Prosper Portland. And so, again, worked in there at different levels around economic development. And that was 5.5 years. And then I was actually appointed to lead the state's economic development agency, which was called Business Oregon, or Oregon Business Development Department's kind of its formal bureaucratic name. And I did that for 4 years. And then right before COVID, I started in January, before COVID hit here, I moved over to a small boutique management consulting firm called Coraggio Group. I do a lot of strategy leadership work with organizations anywhere from, you know, private sector. So, you know, think private sector firms in Portland, education, lots of higher ed. So universities, community colleges, nonprofits. Have a couple of nonprofit clients right now. Actually, one of my clients is Krista Obel Eschenman, the place where she works. So I get to actually work on some projects with Krista, which is always a fun thing. That's a client I have right now. So yeah, working with a variety of different types of organizations, large and small.
And you came back to Portland Mennonite too.
Yeah, we did. Yep. And when I lived in Seattle, we actually attended University Presbyterian, a Presbyterian church there. But when we moved to North Carolina, really cool experience. So both UNC and Duke have divinity schools, and some divinity students, along with some, I would just say, Mennonites in the Triangle region of North Carolina, decided to start a church before we joined it, obviously. But it was only a couple years old. And I think when we joined, it was like 20 people. It was mostly, I would say, young adults in school or young professionals, but we didn't even have a pastor. And so the divinity students would kind of preach. And they were drawn to the Mennonite faith, given some of our kind of core beliefs around, you know, being Anabaptists, certainly I'm sure played into things like that, but just some of our social focused efforts that the Mennonite church is really known for drew these divinity students to the faith. So we had I think Samantha was the second kid born in the church. Isaac Viegas, he's done some very prominent roles in the Mennonite church nationally. He ended up being, we hired him as a permanent pastor, although I think at the time we could only afford him for half-time, and I think he's full-time now. But that whole story of it's like a small business, right? You're planting a church and everything was volunteer and really no money. And it's now much lower. I think it's around 70 or 80, and they got a youth of like 15 or so, if I follow it correctly. So that was a really interesting experience. And then when we moved back to Portland, we joined Portland Mennonite. Rejoined, because I actually joined joined Chapel Hill. So I had to go through the the membership process twice. They wouldn't hold my membership over.
But you passed.
I passed, right, yeah.
I'm guessing that some of your business skills maybe came in handy there, is that church in North Carolina was just sort of figuring out some of the ways to be a church.
Yeah, I think informally we'd have a lot of congregational meetings where, you know, in our setting, right, the table handles those types of things and focuses there. But when you're a church of, 20, 25 and no one's permanent, you have congregational meetings, and yeah, we'd all sit there with like the spreadsheet of the budget trying to figure out of the minimal resources we have and how would we use them and, all that kind of stuff. So, and of course, as the church matured, things like their version of the table formed and stuff like that.
Well, I have about 1,000 more questions, but we're running out of time, but I am going to ask you just one more.
Yep.
You've obviously seen a little bit of the country, and I'm sure more than you talked about, but is there a place either in this country or in the world that you would like to go to either again or for the first time? If time and money and nothing would stop you, where might you go?
Can I get more than one answer?
Absolutely.
Here in Oregon, I have a love for the Steens Mountains, which are in Harney County, way southern Oregon, Nevada border area. I ran cross country in high school, and there was a running camp I went to in high school there. So I spent, I always like to say, I scraped my knee and dropped a lot of sweat in the Steens Mountains. So, but it's just, if you've never been there, it's not like the mountains we think of when, in the Cascades. It's super remote. And there's, in some cases, there's a spiritual element to when you're in a place like that and nothing else is around, and it's a bit desolate, but has its own beauty. So I love that place. I haven't been there in like 15 years, but it's on my list as my kids get older. I want to take them backpacking there. So I think about that place a lot, actually. So that's a place I would just love to get to right here in Oregon. I would be remiss if I didn't say Vienna, Austria. That's where I met Melinda. So we were both studying abroad in college, and she was at the University of Illinois and I was at University of Puget Sound, and we decided, obviously independently, to do study abroad, and we both picked Vienna, Austria, and that's where I met Melinda. So that's a place that I would love to get back to, just because it holds kind of special memories there. A place that I would love to get to is Patagonia. As I get a little older and my kids get a little older, and of course, as time permits here in Oregon, hiking and backpacking, and you just see the beauty of a place like that. I would love to get there at some point. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but it's kind of one of those bucket lists for me.
Thank you, Chris, so much for taking the time to give us this glimpse into your amazing life.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's not so amazing.
We'll be the judge. And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.